please the court. My name is Joseph Russell from the Chicago office of Kirkland & Ellis. I represent the defendant appellant, William Hagler, in this appeal. On August 15, 2000, there was an attempted armed bank robbery of the National City Bank in Wood Burn, Indiana. Over 9 years later, William Hagler was indicted for that offense. Normally, that indictment would have been barred by the statute of limitations, which in this case was 5 years. It was not barred in this case on August 15, 2005, which was 5 years after the attempted armed bank robbery, because there was DNA evidence collected from the getaway car used in the bank robbery. That DNA evidence brought into play a tolling statute, 18 U.S.C. 3297, that tolls statutes of limitations when there's DNA evidence. And the tolling stops when the DNA evidence implicates, this is the key operative phrase of 3297, when the DNA evidence implicates an identified person in the commission of the felony. In this case, I'd like to apply that the language of that statute to the facts and the DNA evidence that was collected from this getaway car. One of the items that was collected from the getaway car was a yellow cloth mask, which was later described or identified as item 7B1. In 2000, that mask was submitted to the Indiana State Police Laboratory for analysis. In 2001, DNA was extracted from that cloth mask. A DNA profile was developed, and it was submitted, uploaded to the DNA database, otherwise known as CODIS. As soon as it was uploaded, it started generating hits or matches with identified people, names of people who had DNA profiles in that database. We don't know exactly who was hit by the 7B1 profile, because in 2007 the U.S. or the Indiana State Laboratory deleted the names that hit upon that profile.
Do we know how many? Besides an excessive amount.
There was evidentiary hearing in this case. At that point, the Indiana State Laboratory did not know how many hits. William Hagler's brother is being prosecuted in a different case. In an evidentiary hearing this year, the estimate was about 40 people, about 40 hits.
And how many robbers were there?
There were two robbers.
So how can that possibly constitute DNA that implicates an identified person if there are 40 hits?
Under the language of statute, the tolling statute, if an identified person is implicated, then the tolling statute is no longer in play. In this case, it's very likely that William Hagler himself, if not his brother, were among the list of 40 people that were hit by the 7B1 profile.
Along with 38 others. So nobody was effectively implicated because it was too indiscriminate to incriminate anybody in any sort of a conclusive way.
I think this gets to the real crux of the appeal. What does implicate mean? And it's not incriminate. There's no definition of implicate in the statute itself. So then we have to rely on dictionary definitions, legislative history. And we don't want to do that.
What good does a dictionary definition do?
I agree that
dictionaries provide alternative meanings. You don't get anywhere with dictionaries.
I completely agree, Judge Posner. Samuel Johnson, Noah Webster, contributors to online dictionaries can all testify that definitions of words are unsteady, unstable, and acontextual in the dictionary setting.
What does it mean?
In context, it means that William Hagler, among with potentially 38 others, including his brother, were brought into a close or implied connection with a commission of the felony.
How 40 hits a close and intimate connection with a felony?
There were 40 investigative leads provided the police. All they had to do was to take those names and to, you know, contact, investigate those people. Maybe but in proximity to where they lived, there's adequate facts in the record that William Hagler had close connections to Woodburn. His the wife or the mother of his children lived in the trailer park a mile from the bank.
I mean, the point of this DNA testing is to identify the perpetrator. And if the technology generates an excessive amount of hits, in this case 40 or thereabouts, how is that an identification device? It doesn't function. It doesn't identify functionally anybody. It's inconclusive.
Well, again, implication does not mean conclusive identification. In a case I've cited from the Ninth Circuit from this past year, Haskell, there's a discussion that the law enforcement actually does use these partial profiles that hit on multiple people in DNA databases for investigative leads. And so they can't just,
with this many hits?
As many hits as they have the resources to investigate.
And it would be very odd for one of these people whose DNA was found, but who had absolutely nothing to do with it. It would be very odd for that person to say, "Well, you know, I was implicated in a crime. I was implicated." That's ridiculous, right?
Well, I'm not speaking in terms of people that weren't eventually prosecuted for the crime.
We're trying to find a meaning for the word implicate, and just because your DNA shows up in one of the along with 40 or 100 or 1,000 other people, that doesn't mean that you have been implicated in a crime. Implicated in a crime means you were a suspect. Comes close to saying you committed the crime. Right? It's implicated.
It comes close, but it doesn't say that. And in this case, William Hagler has the there's great likelihood he was identified as
the other 39 people were implicated, right? That's your proposition. They were all implicated.
That's true. They were all potential suspects. They were shortlisted of everyone in the DNA database.
I think you're using the word oddly. It's strong. To be implicated in a crime really means to be a criminal.
I respectfully disagree. That definition there was no definition in the tolling statute, and there is a very pliant meaning to implicate. You know, it's synonymous with imply. It's not the same as incriminate. It's not the same as identify. Implicate doesn't have the same scientific degree of certainty that the U.S.
But what? Why would Congress have wanted to use implicate as broadly as you want? Wouldn't that defeat the purpose of the statute? Or certainly impair it? Because you're saying, well, they have to, instead of just waiting, because they say, well, what are you going to do with 40? We're going to go investigate 40 people. So we'll just wait, you know, for the technology to improve. Now they can't do that under your view. They have to go investigate all these people.
I think the purpose of the statute was to serve as an investigative tool for the police, not as a reason not to investigate. Let's say it's not 40, it's 2. It's 2 people.
Well, what if
do
it's
the police
a
have
what
a,
if it's
obligation?
100?
excuse me?
What if it's 100 people?
Well, it depends on the resources of the police department, I guess, and the seriousness of the crime.
What if they don't have the resources?
Well, in the case of a 100, then if it turns out that the actual defendant in the criminal trial was one of the people implicated by the DNA testing, I think the tolling statute is no longer in play. And I've entered my rebuttal time.
I'm sorry, it's the statute. What if it's 1,000?
Well, then I think it's a very fact-specific analysis. I think 1,000 would be non-discriminating. But when you're in the dozens or 40, I think that's within the...
Well, how on earth is one supposed to apply the statute?
Well, I think this is a very unusual case where the defendant himself...
I don't know what's unusual about it.
That the
how are we going to apply the statute? There are 100 you said they had to investigate, but 1,000 not. So where's the line?
Well, in the cases of statute of limitation, the interpretation should be liberal, as the U.S. Supreme Court states in Marion, and the interpretation should be in favor of repose. And in this case, William Hagler is potentially implicated in a crime.
The evidence is good, right? So I should think the reasons for statute of limitations are attenuated when you have DNA evidence.
They're attenuated, but here William Hagler was actually identified or could have potentially been identified in relation to the felony as early as July 23, 2002, which means the statute of limitations would have started running again.
They have other things to do besides investigating 40 people, right? And anyway, you don't draw the line at 40. You drew it, it was between 100 and 1,000. I thought you were...
Right, but it's a fact-specific case. In this case, William Hagler potentially could have been identified, and the U.S.
That's true with 1,000. It just, we have unlimited police resources. We can investigate 1,000 people.
Right, and it's...
So where do we draw the line?
Well, it's a liberal interpretation.
Where do we draw the line?
I'd say 40.
That's convenient.
All right. We say 38, so... Okay, thank you, Mr. Russell. Mr. Holler?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The government says one. It identifies one specific person. The statute is triggered. The statute says that a DNA testing must implicate an identified person, one identified person. That is the unique nature of DNA evidence, is that unlike biological evidence in the past that could get it down to 8% of the population or 1% of the population, DNA testing has the ability to say that this is, and that scientists can testify, that hair is Mr. Hagler's hair.
Well, it didn't used to be that way, though. Throughout the 90s, DNA testing was admitted as an identification or as identification evidence based on probabilities, not this is the guy.
That is correct. And, in fact, the testimony, there was some testimony about this in Sean Hagler's hearing, which is sort of related to this case and I believe, therefore, in the record. And there was testimony by Ms. Hart and by others who testified in the Justice for All Act, is that around 2003, around the time that this statute was passed, the nature of DNA testing got to the point where the genome was mapped and where one could specifically say, this is that person's DNA. That's what has changed. And that's why instead of simply saying we're going to make assumptions and we're going to make scientific assumptions that, look, there's a 1 in 1 million chance. Prior to 2003, there was a 1 in 1 million chance that this is somebody else's DNA. Well, what that really means is that there are approximately 300 other people in the United States who have that same DNA. We don't know for sure that it's this person. Now we're up in the quadrillions or quintillions. We as scientists will assert and will testify, this is his hair. This is his DNA. It's not 1 in 1 million. It is. And that's the difference that justifies extending the statute of limitations. And that is, I think, also the reason that shows that the defendant's interpretation is not correct. The defendant's interpretation is one of 40 people who's in the database, not even the population. These 40 people all match the DNA. It's one of these 40 people or somebody with similar evidence. The defendant's view, ironically, essentially extends the statute of limitations in situations where we don't know where the wrong person is being hit on. Under the defendant's view, the statute started running in May of 2001 because that's the point at which the scientific resources were brought to bear and the initial partial profile was matched. And under his view, that means the statute was told from August until the next May. And so if we wanted to, we could sit around and wait for another 8 months based on the fact that some other person whose DNA it is not matched. And I think strongly highlights the flaw in the defendant's argument. The other flaw in the defendant's argument is the defendant's second sort of fallback position is, well, it matched in July of 2002 because that's when William Hagler's DNA entered the database. Now, if we had actually prosecuted William Hagler based on the fact that his DNA matched the cloth mask, and keep in mind we don't even know that it would have hit on the cloth mask, and we had prosecuted him and convicted him on that basis, we would have had to reverse that conviction and remand for a new trial. Why? Because we now know it was not his DNA. It was his brother Sean's DNA on that mask. So the defendant is essentially saying we should have started the statute of limitations running on that basis, and we should have therefore tried him in 2007, when had we convicted him in 2007, we would have convicted him on invalid evidence. That's why we don't extend the statute of limitations based on the fact that it hit 100 people or 40 people or, frankly, even 2 people, because we don't know who it was. But with this testing, the scientific community at least believes, and the scientific evidence supports that, that this hair is William Hagler's hair, and that for those reasons, as you explained, Judge Posner, the reasons for the statute of limitations are attenuated. It is a known fact. It's not something that can be disputed. And for that reason, and that unique reason, that's why Congress would say the statute of limitations can be relieved under these circumstances.
Tolling provision was adopted when?
The tolling provision was adopted in the Justice for All Act, so I believe it was either 2003 or 2004. It was prior to the expiration, so the defendant hasn't even raised an ex post facto claim here, but it was triggered. It was within the time frame under Stogner versus California.
And DNA evidence was refined to the extent of being able to identify an exact match around 2002, 2003?
Around that time, there's some testimony, Your Honor, about because the defendant did get into this, if you read through the transcript hearing. In 2001, they were using, I think, what was known as version PowerPlex 1, and that could only identify 8 of the 16 loci, so we didn't even have the other 8 loci. And the testimony was that Indiana upgraded its technology in 2002. It's not clear whether that particular one alone would have been enough. The other thing to point out, though, of course, is that I think at that point around 2003 was just essentially the cusp of when this technology was being developed. It wasn't rolled out until much later on. And if somebody, I mean, we still to this day often will get only partial DNA matches and profiles. And if we have a partial profile, we will upload it and we will submit it to the database. And sometimes it will hit on a situation where it is one of our witnesses. It's somebody who was interviewed. It's somebody who lives in the small town of Woodburn, Indiana. And we can use that information. We can't use that under 3297 to extend the statute of limitations, but we can still testify as we did back in the 90s. It's a one-in-a-million match, and based on the fact that we have all this other evidence or a co-conspirator or somebody else, we can still use that. But the unique nature that allows the extension of the statute of limitations, it was around that 2001 to 2003 range once the genome was mapped and the technology was developed. And as as there was testimony from Lisa Black in the motion to dismiss hearing, and there was testimony from both Lisa Black and Linda McDonald, another serologist from the state of Indiana, at trial, the technology just keeps getting better and better. And the technology allows us to, with even smaller and smaller particles, find more and more of the 16 nodes and become more likely to identify that. So for all those reasons, we do not believe that the statute of limitations precluded William Hagler's prosecution in this case. And we also don't believe – I do think that the one sort of argument in terms of the defendant is if we got this DNA evidence and then sat on it for 5 years and did nothing – that would be sort of the indication of where his constitutional pre-indictment delay argument might come in. It doesn't work here because there's no evidence that we sat on this in bad faith. There's no evidence that anything happened during that 4-year period or that 9-year period that prejudiced him. But to the extent that there is that concern, I think that constitutional sort of outlier, if the government really is sort of saying, aha, you know, now we've waited, we're going to sit on this evidence for a long time, that is sort of where that would come in and kind of would come into play. So if the court has no further questions, the government believes that the statute of limitations argument and the other arguments that have been raised by Mr. Hagler are without merit, and the judgment of the district court should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Holler. Mr. Russell, how much time does he have? No time? Well, you can have a minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. DNA evidence testing was imperfect in the 2000-2008 time frame. Lisa Black, the Indiana State Police DNA specialist, said basically up until 2008 they were using beta as opposed to the VHS version of DNA testing. There is fanfare now that DNA testing is a lot more accurate than it used to be. That wasn't the case in early 2000. the early 2000 period, when several partial profiles matched profiles on the CODIS database, including perhaps William Hagler himself. The fact that 9 years passed from the robbery to the indictment meant that William Hagler lost that list of potential matches to support his statute of limitations defense. It also deprived him of the opportunity to show the jury that there were other suspects that could have been implicated in the robbery. One last point about pre-indictment delay. The police did have a fingerprint of William Hagler that was taken from the exterior of the getaway car for unknown reasons. The police never analyzed that fingerprint. The U.S. said in its brief that was unfortunate. That's not a sound reason for the delay. And for that reason, the due process rights of Mr. Hagler to receive a fair trial were violated by the pre-indictment delay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Esslin. You were appointed. You know.
That's true, Your Honor.
Pardon?
That's true, Your Honor.
Yes, well, we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.